Welcome back in hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, and Ryan Porth here with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking about the NFL playoffs. And to help us do that, we go to one of the guys I've enjoyed watching the most throughout my life, talking all things NFL on our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Trey Wingo joins us now, doing some great stuff with the Half Forgotten History podcast, also the Chop Shop with Mark Schlereth. Trey, I've really enjoyed the work you've been doing as of late. Thanks for taking time to join us.
Hey, thanks for that, man. We're having a lot of fun. That's all that matters. So I hope you guys are doing well, and sorry about the Titans.
Speaking of that, obviously a tough week for Titans fans this week. What did you think of the game for the Titans against the Ravens, and specifically how the Ravens were able to just totally neutralize Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill in that game?
Well, look, I mean, it couldn't have started better, right? You're up 10-0. Arthur Smith had dialed up a great script to start that game. But after that, you guys were outscored 20-3. And what you said, I think, is the most important thing, because people are talking about, hey, Lamar Jackson finally got his first playoff win, which I hate because he didn't do it by himself. Okay? No quarterback wins a game by themselves. So the most important thing was, they neutralized Derrick Henry, and what I consider the coolest thing about that from a team-building perspective is the last season, Henry ran roughshod over the Ravens in Baltimore in that night playoff game, and they made a concerted effort as a franchise, the Ravens did, in the offseason to say, we're not going to let that happen again. So what did they do? They went out in the offseason and got Calais Campbell, and then they thought they got Michael Brockers from the Rams, and then he failed a physical, so they went and got Derek Wolfe. Those are two big run-stuffing dudes on that defensive line, and they had a plan. They saw that they had a flaw. They went out and fixed that flaw, and you saw that come to fruition last weekend when they took care of Derrick Henry. And that's the thing that I appreciated most from the Ravens' perspective about, listen, we can't let this happen again, and they went out and got the people to make sure it wouldn't happen again.
Yeah, certainly paid off. Of course, I know of another AFC team that had a flaw and went out and spent a lot of money on pass rushers who had zero sacks. So it doesn't always work out that way or work out well for teams. But Trey, with the Ravens moving forward, this game at Buffalo, do you feel like you said, I mean, it's overblown with the Lamar Jackson stuff. I mean, it was his third freaking game. But do you think that that's now maybe a little bit of weight lifted in a dangerous team that can get some more wins here?
Oh, look, listen, it absolutely was a thing mentally for him. But I'm not a big believer in wins as a quarterback stat, right? It's just not a thing that I subscribe to because, like we said, it was a 20-13 game, even with Lamar Jackson running for over 100 yards in a playoff and throwing for actually more yards in the air than Ryan Tannehill did, which if you told me that would have happened in that game, I would have said, how much money can I place on that to not happen? So I mean, I give him a lot of credit. I give him a lot of credit on that, but the other thing, too, that was the first time in Lamar's career as a starting quarterback that the team had won a game in which they'd fallen behind by 10 or more points. He had been 0-6. The Ravens had been 0-6 in those situations. So from that perspective, for Lamar to be able to take a terrible start where they fall down 10-0, and then he threw that horrible arm punt to Malcolm Butler for the first interception of that game, for him to mentally shrug that off and say, I'm going to be fine, I think does bode well for them in the future. And the game this weekend in Buffalo is going to be insane because, you know, in many ways, and people are going to, like, freak out about this, Lamar and Josh are very similar in their ability to move the ball with their legs. Obviously, Josh is a much more polished passer at this point, but that game, I think, is the most interesting game of the weekend because, look, Buffalo was great in their and Josh was phenomenal in their win over Indianapolis, but again, to that point, it was a 27-24 game, and Josh was, what, 26 of 34 in that game for 324 yards and two touchdowns and no interceptions, and it still took a Herculean effort by the defense and some really questionable coaching decisions by Frank Reich to allow them to win that game. So it's never about one person in terms of what the outcome is, especially in the postseason.
Trey Wingo on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Trey, I heard you and Mark talking about this. And look, you know Mike Vrabel. You know what he's about. You know what he was about as a player. And he's been so aggressive during his time here as coach of the Titans. But the 4th-and-2, the decision to punt there in that situation, trailing 17-13, how surprising was that to you? And I guess how going against the grain was that compared to what we've seen out of Mike Vrabel his entire coaching career so far?
Yeah. It was a real stunner for me. I mean, you're on the 40-yard line. You're down by you're down, as you said, by four points, and you do have Derrick Henry. Now, granted, it had not been a good day for Derrick Henry. There's no question about that. But to me, in that situation, I was literally shocked that they didn't go for it. And I think on the ensuing drive, the Ravens had a fourth and one or two from the 38. And I think they went for it, and they got Willie Snead got called for a pick. Otherwise, they would have had the first down easily. So I was really flummoxed that he did not go for it in that situation. Again, as to what you said, how aggressive and creative he's been as a play caller, as a head coach, and the things he's been able to sort of pull out of nowhere, I was very, very much surprised that he did not go for it in that situation.
Trey, a lot of talk all year about, you know, how bad the Titans' defense was, which – to me, it was more a personnel thing than anything. Again, they tried to address pass rush. They weren't able to do it. They're running out undrafted, you know, guys to try to help Harold Landry. But no defensive coordinator was a talking point all year as well. Obviously, you're not going to snap your fingers and replace a Dean Pease. But how much of a factor do you think that is? How important do you think it is that Mike Vrabel finds or elevates someone to actually be the named DC?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think someone needs to be the defensive coordinator there. It's like the Texans, right? The Texans went for 2 years thinking they didn't need a general manager. And then they trade away Laremy Tunsil. They trade for Laremy Tunsil and give away all these first-round picks and don't sign him to a contract so he has all the leverage. Then Bill O'Brien trades away DeAndre Hopkins, and it was an absolute mess. So what do they do now after 2 seasons of thinking we don't need a general manager? They hire Nick Caserio and make him the third highest paid general manager in the league. So that tells you that was not a good plan. Okay. And I think that same situation needs to be addressed with the Tennessee Titans.
Trey, looking at the NFC right now, obviously three old heads at quarterback with Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers in that conference right now. We know how accomplished Brady is. And we know Brees and Rodgers, two of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. How important do you think it is for those two specifically to get that second Super Bowl? When you're starting to talk about legacy and, you know, the greatest quarterbacks of all time in that conversation, how important is getting that second Super Bowl ring?
Well, I think that for them it means a lot. I'm an outlier here. I'm not a ring counter. Like, you're not going to – My argument for someone being the best isn't they've won the most championships. That means they're on a really good team. To me, being the best means you excel at your position, and you excel at your position in critical situations. So the ring thing for me is not something that I hang my mantle on in terms of who is the greatest of all time. All that being said, yes, it is desperation time for both Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers, because what we're seeing here, I mean, the Saints the last 3 years in the postseason, it's been unbelievable. They're the first team ever, and I got to phrase this correctly because you say it the wrong way and it makes no sense. They're the first team ever to lose 3 straight playoff games with the game-winning points coming on the last play of the game. Someone once said it this way. They said, oh, you know, the Saints, they've lost 3 straight games in the postseason having fewer points. I'm like, yeah, that's how it works. If you don't score more, you lose the game. So you have to explain it like, on the last play of the game, the last play was the winning point. That's never happened before. My preseason prediction for the Super Bowl was the Chiefs and the Saints based on a couple of things. One, obviously Patrick Mahomes is Patrick Mahomes. And two, in this weird season that we had where there was no off season, there was no preseason, there was no OTAs, there was no mini camps, there was no training camps really, that stability meant something. Now, we've seen Drew Brees fall off the cliff a little bit here. And, he's not what he was. And he's nowhere close. And he has the fractured ribs. Aaron Rodgers is playing as well as anybody. And I think he's going to be the MVP of the league. I'm concerned about Drew Brees and the Saints this weekend because going up against the Bucs and beating a team for a third time is not really a thing. The last 3 times that has had the ability to happen, it's happened. But the way Brees and the Saints are playing, as opposed to the way Brady and the Bucs are playing right now, I mean, the last 6 weeks of the season, Tom Brady played quarterback better than anybody. He was absolutely phenomenal. The Rodgers thing is interesting because there is a real home field advantage in Green Bay, right? I mean, even though there's no fans in the stands, there's a home field advantage there with the weather, especially if you're talking about a team from Tampa or a team from New Orleans in a dome that's going to come up there and play them on championship weekend if it gets that far. And I think this is the best chance that Aaron Rodgers has to get. I mean, not only has he won one Super Bowl, they've only been to one. And that's the amazing thing to me about the Packers. With everything that guy has, and as long as he's been around, the fact that they've only been to one is absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, no doubt. Trey, you mentioned earlier Bill O'Brien's GM skills, obviously fared better as a coach. Now he's in the Nick Saban coaching career fix-it repair shop here in Alabama, yeah. Apparently. But I think back to a year ago, Kansas City has the bye, and all of a sudden it's 24-0. And, of course they came back. But I do look at this weekend. It's been a while since they've really had a game of consequence. The Browns coming in, rolling off that huge win over the Steelers. How dangerous do you think this is for the Chiefs, if at all?
Well, it's interesting, right? I think at some point during the season, and I listen, you talk to a lot of people that have repeated. You mentioned Schlereth when we do our Chop Shop stuff and Teddy Bruschi. They'll tell you the hard part of repeating is the mental fatigue as much as the physical fatigue. And it's just like, okay, listen, we know we're good. We know we want to prove in the postseason, so we just have to find a way to work our way through the regular season. And it's different than when you're chasing it. It's 100% different because you have this thing in front of you that you think you can taste, and you're like, I've worked my whole life, and this is the thing that's in front of me, and I want to get it. I want to put my hands on that trophy. When you're the champion, your mindset changes completely. And I think that they've, for lack of a better term, they've played with their food for a long time. They won six straight games by 6 points or less. To put that in context, here's the list of other times that's happened in the NFL. Never! No one... It's never happened before. So, they go up big on the Saints. They go up big on the Dolphins, and they just sort of, lollygag for a little bit. You can't do that in the postseason. But I do think that they're ready. What you're going to see out of Kansas City this weekend, I believe, will be the best Kansas City you've seen all season. I think they're rested. They're ready. They know what's in front of them. They're trying to do something that hasn't happened in 16 years. Repeat as Super Bowl champs. And it's a bad matchup with Cleveland. Like, everyone's saying, oh, Cleveland can run the ball. Well, so can Baltimore. And as presently constructed, the Ravens are 0-3 against the Kansas City Chiefs. Here's the problem for the Browns. Obviously, it's a circus show with Patrick Mahomes and company. The Browns' defense is 29th in DVOA against deep passes. Hello, Tyreek Hill. The Browns are 29th in DVOA on third down passes. Hello, Patrick Mahomes. The Browns are 28th in the league in DVOA on passes to tight end. Have you heard of Travis Kelce? So all the things that the Chiefs do really well, the Browns are terrible at. So the only puncher's chance Cleveland has is to have those two backs run for a bazillion yards and cash in on a touchdown in every red zone situation they have. If they don't do that, it's going to be a really long day for Cleveland.
Trey Wingo on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Trey, there's reports out there that maybe Jacksonville and Urban Meyer are close to finalizing a deal. If that ends up happening and Urban Meyer becomes the head coach in Jacksonville, how do you think he translates to the NFL, yeah, given his history and kind of having one foot in the door, one foot out all the time in the offense that he runs? How do you think he translates?
Well, a couple things. It's amazing how much his health is better when there's a job open, right? It's
yeah.
Phenomenal. It's crazy how that happens. Here's the deal. Urban Meyer is a very, very good coach. And could he be a good coach in the NFL? Absolutely. But history suggests that it's going to be much more of a struggle than he or anyone else wants to believe. There are only three coaches that have had real success in collegiate ball and gone to have amazing success coaching in the NFL. That would be Dick Vermeil, Jimmy Johnson, and Pete Carroll. The list of bodies strewn across the NFL landscape of college coaches who had remarkable careers and try to take it to the next level is really, really bad. There's just not a lot of examples out there. Could it be good for Urban Meyer? Absolutely. Do I have any certainty that it will? Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, Trevor Lawrence sounds good, but still a lot to figure out there. Of course, around here, Trey, people are bracing for Arthur Smith. Every day we get a new update, like, oh, he just went to dinner with this team and second interview with that team. What do you think about Arthur Smith? Pretty rapid ascent here from tight ends coach to the one guy who was requested by everyone. How do you think he projects as a head coach?
Well, I think he's going to get an opportunity. You know what I mean? I think he's earned that. That situation. There's no question in my mind that he has earned that opportunity. But again, it's one of those things where I can't tell you with any certainty how it's going to turn out. I mean, it turned out well for Matt LaFleur, but of course Matt LaFleur went to a place that had, wait for it, Aaron Rodgers. So the most attractive job right there for me right now that's opening is absolutely the Chargers. You have a quarterback in Justin Herbert. Just think about the other pieces that are in place right now for the Chargers. You have Bosa, you have Ingram, you have Derwin James, you have Keenan Allen, you have Austin Eckler, and I'm missing a few names. But if you talk about a situation that's ready for success right away, the most attractive job out there. I mean, I know people are like, "Oh, Trevor Lawrence and all that kind of stuff." I can go down the list of quarterbacks drafted in the first round since 2011, and most of them have sucked. Okay, there's been a few that have been really, really good. But it's a crapshoot. It really, really is. And we have a proven commodity in Justin Herbert right now in a ready-made situation with a great stadium and a team that has, if they just don't get injured. The Chargers are so weird. They're just so weird. Weird things happen to them all the time. In 2010, the Chargers had the number one offense and the number one defense and failed to make the playoffs. That's almost impossible, yet somehow they pulled it off. So if you can just get the weirdness out of the Chargers situation, to me, if I'm Arthur Smith, and with his offensive capabilities and his creative play calling, that to me is by far the most desirable job.
Trey Wingo has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Trey, we really appreciate you taking time to join us. Great stuff, and hope to talk to you again soon.
You got it, guys. Take care. Be well.